Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, and hopefully indeed, the new capital of the new state of liberty here in the near future. The 51st state movement alive and well and kicked off. We'll be talking about that a little bit today. But just an amazing, amazing response so far online. Some of the local media outlets have tried to literally make fun of the movement and everything, but it has been overwhelming support on a few of the local media sites, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. Well, brought to you once again by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and Legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we take our freedom back, and our hope is not in man, our hope is in Jesus Christ. And our freedom needs to be made a reality, not just because Trump got elected. We need to continue. We need to continue to promote freedom everywhere and defend freedom locally. If we don't do that, we're going to be in a world of trouble in very short order. So we have an opportunity before us that is like nothing we have ever needed to do or ever had to do or ever had the opportunity to do in the last 50 years. And so today, as you are sitting in your home or in your vehicle right now listening to Patriot Radio, think about that. How are you going to defend freedom locally? And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths and ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And once again, that rest brings a rebirth of freedom. It really does. Well, now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing, and on the international front. Now, if you really want to know who our enemies are in the world, if you really want to know who is against the United States and against United States leadership and against United States prosperity, listen to this. It is only the countries that come out and say these kinds of things that are really threatened by making America great again, okay? China comes out today and says the rookie Trump, this quote-unquote, the rookie Trump needs to fall in line. And obviously, trying to put him below the Chinese leadership and below the Chinese communists. And there's been all this fretting by the liberals after the call from the Taiwanese premier. All this fretting, oh, why would we want to do this? Look it, they're not our friends. They never have been our friends. And the fact that you're apologizing for a communist regime again puts the left on the wrong side of the issue, the wrong side of history. I mean, apologizing for the horrific treatment of Christians in that country. Because that's what you're doing when you're apologizing for that government and that regime. And, you know, it's the same liberals that fretted over the fact that the Chinese flag was taken down after there was a huge insult last Easter, where the Chinese flag was left flying over the Washington State Capitol on Easter weekend. I mean, what? That is not an accident. That is intentional. And all these liberals fretting about the fact that Chinese flag was taken down, and right, it was rightfully so taken down. What an affront to Christians everywhere who are persecuted in places like North Korea and China. And this idea that, you know, the Chinese treat everybody well inside their country, it's just not true. It's not borne out by history. It's not borne out by the facts. Unbelievable. Also on the international front, I'm going to keep mentioning this. We have a lot of people looking at prophecy. A lot of people looking at what is happening in Jerusalem, what is happening specifically on the Temple Mount. And I'm going to keep highlighting the fact that there's all of these things that are happening for the first time in hundreds and hundreds of years. First, you have the rebuilding of temple artifacts, the rebuilding of the accoutrements and the clothing that are worn by the high priests, with sacrifice in the temple. There's a real push and real talk right now that between Putin and Trump, they might be able to find some agreement to rebuild the temple. And again, I'm not advocating this, but I'm just stating what I'm getting reported to me. And then you had the reconstitution of the Sanhedrin for the first time in hundreds of years, and now they have elected a Jewish high priest. I mean, they are moving forward over there, and a lot of people are missing this. But the people that are attuned to prophetic word and what's happening in the scripture are just watching this with just amazement, because 100 years ago, this would have been just laughed at, absolutely laughed at. But we're still seeing it. Well, also on the international front, still no Brexit, and the United Kingdom Prime Minister faces a parliamentary rebellion over the refusal to push Brexit plans. So the people have spoken, and government foot dragging in England is now trying, you know, threatening to derail the entire Brexit. I mean, how do they think that's going to go with all the people that voted for it? And now the government is intentionally trying to sabotage the will of the people. You know, if it was the other way, oh, we need to enforce the will of the people. And it would have been, you know, this resounding thing in the mainstream media. We need to support the will of the people. But when it's the other way, no, we can't do that. And it's interesting right now that it has made international news that 20 to 40 lawmakers right now are actually willing to back a motion to put pressure on the prime minister. And these 20 to 40 lawmakers could be the swing vote to undo the current government in England. And it's like, it's kind of interesting too that they're kind of tone deaf fighting this thing, especially after what's next in the international front, and that is Italy's Brexit moment. So Prime Minister Matteo Renzi came to power in 2014, and he promised to reform Italian politics. He promised to fix their economy, which was really, really in bad shape. She still is in bad shape. And now the Italians voted no. It is. And the Italians have voted no on this referendum. They've said, look, we don't want to have any part of the European Union. And while this was a very complex vote, overwhelmingly the people saw it through and just said, we're voting no. We don't want to have any more to do with this. And Renzi now, after this no vote, is threatening, you know, probably the same foot dragging behind the scenes, but he has clearly come out and said that he would resign. If you miss the fact that the globalists are being rebuked across the world, globalism is just being rebuked, you are missing the significant lesson right now in history. And one of the biggest tone-deaf parties in this whole thing is the Democrat Party. They're missing this entire thing. They don't understand. How could people not want one world government? How could people not want to give up their sovereignty and then watch their economy go in the toilet? So, to me, this is just the beginning. And if we see Trump go the opposite way of what he said he was going to do, if we see, you know, the British government try and go against the people, we see the Italian government try and go against the people, you are going to start to see popular rebellions in those countries. And these political rebellions these are not a one-off. I mean, Donald Trump is not a one-off. If people feel like that's not working, it's just the beginning. And I think we need to understand that politically. That's what's happening right now. And that brings us to the national front and the fact that what has become very toxic are these so-called free trade agreements, which are not free and not about trade. And in fact, the best thing was Art Thompson. The best way this was put was Art Thompson when he said that it can't be free trade if government's involved. And it's very true. If you want true free trade, you're removing barriers, not creating these superstructures and trade organizations that rule over countries' trade agreements and trade practices and have the ability to say something is invalid as far as a practice by a business. So we're watching this happen. And what's really interesting, we're going to talk, you know, my guest today is going to be talking a little bit about this. What's very interesting about this is that the working class, the heart, the backbone of America, especially in private sector unions, but also in government unions, have said enough. Our jobs are going overseas. We're losing our livelihood. Things were worse off now than we were 8 years ago. We just can't continue to go down this road. And so you have the conservative movement now resurging among the blue collar. Where I believe it's been latent there all along, because we all love freedom. If you love America, you love freedom. And that's what's really resonating. So, you know, if the Democrat Party continues with the tone-deaf approach, and some members of the Republican Party continue with the tone-deaf approach to what's happening around the world and the historical moment we're in, this historic moment is not going to come again for a long time. And if you don't recognize that the change is happening, you're going to get swept up in the tsunami of the people. Also on the national front, Donald Trump continuing down the path he said he was going to continue down, and to designate the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, which means that the unindicted co-conspirators listed in the Holy Land Foundation trial by a federal district court judge, including the Council of American Islamic Relations and the North American Islamic Trust, which owns the mosque in Spokane Valley, Washington, would be implicated as part of a terrorist organization, as members of a terrorist organization. And Trump is continuing to push this. We're pushing it at the state level as well. And one of the tactics that I think we have to do is not just think the federal government is going to solve things. We need to make sure we do it at the state level and the local level as well. Probably one of the best headlines of the last week, at least I think so, and this is coming from Roll Call, GOP readies cuts to federal workforce under Trump. Reductions part of long-sought civil service overhaul. If that doesn't make you warm and fuzzy, I don't know what does. Because what this means is that the regulators who are making it so hard to do business in Washington State throughout the rest of the country are facing a time of reckoning. And the fact is that government is too big, and it is not doing what it was intended to do at the beginning, and that is protect our God-given, unalienable rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. In fact, many might argue that it's actually threatening those things, and especially property rights here in the West. So I hope that the BLM is high on the list, the Bureau of Land Management, to have some of their employees get the axe, because they have not managed the land. In fact, they've mismanaged the land here in the West, and many people are fed up with it. They're done with it. And the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee and Representative Jason Chaffetz are taking this up. So keep your eye on this as this moves forward. I mean, it's just one of the best headlines. Makes me excited to see what the next few years are going to bring. Also on the national front, more appointments by Donald Trump. I want to highlight two: Ben Carson for Housing and Urban Development and General Mattis. It's eerie that he looks so much like Patton, by the way. I mean, he really does. But he also talks like Patton. And some people have brought up that there's an issue that, you know, as a former general, you know, that would be military oversight of the the DOD, and the Pentagon. Well, he's not a general anymore, number one. Number two, we need somebody who has experience in warfighting in charge of DOD to rebuild our military, to turn around the attempt at emasculating the military, and who is not going to commit our troops to battle unless there is a formal declaration of war by Congress, and who is not going to commit our troops to battle willy-nilly without a plan and a strategy and goals. And also, he's from Washington State. I mean, love it. So a couple great appointments there, I think. And, you know, General Mattis, he's a no-nonsense guy. Somebody tries to mess with him, tries to mess with our troops, it's not going to be this namby-pamby stuff we've seen the last 8 years and dancing around stuff. It's going to be in, get the job done, and out. And that's really what our military should be about. But according to the Constitution. And we really need to take a look at, do we really need to be so far flung across the world? And is there an opportunity to consolidate our bases overseas? Is there an opportunity to lead with our businesses and our missionaries and use the military as something of last resort instead of using it for nation building and all of these things that have completely failed? And General Mattis is a student of history. He's just very, very well read. So I'm just kind of excited to see what happens with that, and I think you should be as well. Also on the national front, ISIS in Ohio, and still, you notice how this happens. You have this attack, a terrorist attack, okay, on U.S. soil, linked to radical Islamists, and it's like it didn't happen. I mean, a week later, 2 weeks later, it's like it didn't happen. And remember, you know, I talked about this 2 years ago that you know, if it became normal, that we were in a really bad place, and this is becoming normal. And I call on, you know, the next district attorney that's going to be appointed for this area in Eastern Washington by the Trump administration, if they don't commit, if this person does not commit to going after the Muslim Brotherhood and investigating the Muslim Brotherhood, then they don't have any business being district attorney, because this is one of the clear infiltrations that has occurred in this country, and now these terrorist attacks are becoming normal. I mean, every 2-3 weeks, we get one on the news, a serious attack on U.S. soil. Which brings us to the regional front and the situation with Kathy McMorris Rodgers. And right now, a lot of speculation going around here. I'll tell you what I know. It's about a 50-50 toss-up right now between her and the governor of Oklahoma for Secretary of the Interior. It's a cabinet-level position. And again, it's from my sources, 50-50 toss-up. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, what happens if she does get asked to run? And she does, or go through the appointment process. But it is like a mini campaign. And she is appointed. What happens next? Who's going to run to fill her seat? A lot of names being bannered about. A lot of consideration and prayer. And what I would ask you to do if you're listening today is pray about who should do that. Because we need to have people of principle representing us in Washington, D.C. that will not waver, that understand the agenda against freedom that is being perpetrated, and are willing to help Donald Trump drain the swamp, and push forward a movement of freedom, not only on the economic side, but also on the property rights side, on the right to bear arms side, on the liberty side, on the life side, and won't vote for budgets that fund Planned Parenthood. won't vote for budgets that take away liberty, won't vote for budgets that take away our property rights or allow agencies to take away our property rights. So pray about this. You know, we really need to be in prayer about who should be there. Which brings us now to the next thing on the regional front. During session in Olympia, we are going to be doing a Freedom Agenda live video broadcast. We're going to be doing it every week. We'll give you an update of what's happening. I'll also be doing that on Patriot Radio as well. What's happening, how you can get involved, what are the issues of the day, and what the, you know, the dumb bills of the day are, too, that we need to defeat. So stay tuned for that. Also on the regional front, like I promised, the 51st State of Liberty. Now, that was based on a contest that we ran, and Liberty won by a long ways as the most popular name for the new state. So I introduced that. And sure enough, KXLY decided they were going to try to make fun of this a little bit. You know, oh, this always comes up, and it's ridiculous. I want to give you some facts. First of all, we need to continue this conversation that there really are two Washingtons right now. And Frank Chop, Speaker of the House, always says, well, there's one Washington. Really? Is there? Because it sure doesn't feel like it for a lot of us on the east side of the mountains. It sure doesn't feel like it when we have bureaucrats in downtown Olympia try to regulate our farms and our cattle ranches into non-existence. It really doesn't feel like it when we have the King County election results overturn the will of the rest of the people in the state. Doesn't really feel like it when we have the west side of the state voting for gun control, where over here on the east side, we would never do that. Doesn't really feel like it when we have about 74 cents of every tax dollar generated in Spokane County for transportation coming back to Spokane County. In other words, 26 cents or so goes to the west side of the state. Doesn't really feel like it when we have these people in downtown Seattle who do not share our values, who do not value freedom, trying to dictate to us over here and our businesses how we should operate. And, you know, I hear this cry from the left that we're a bunch of welfare freeloaders over here. And my retort to that is this simple. If you believe that we're such a burden on you on the west side of the state, then let us go. I'm calling your bluff right now. Let us go. Let us wallow in the poverty of our wheat fields and our potato farms and our orchards and our vineyards and our hops plantations and our timber and our gold mines and our server farms and our manufacturing. Let us wallow in that poverty. I call your bluff. Let us go then. Because I think a lot of businesses here in Eastern Washington feel very starkly the contrast between us and Idaho as far as regulatory reform is concerned. And I'm tired of it, and I know many other people are tired of it. And right now, there's a huge lead, or at least there was last time it was checked, on KXLY on this poll of whether you support the new state of liberty or not. And it's kind of thrown in their face, you know, because it clearly represents the views of the people. And some liberals in downtown Spokane, some socialists and communists in downtown Spokane are, well, this is a terrible idea. Well, it is for you, because you don't believe in freedom. So we're going to continue to push this. And I'm dead serious about this. We actually have a flag that is being made for the new state. And this proposal, we're going to continue to push forward and keep this thing alive because it does two things. First of all, it calls a bluff on this idea of one Washington when really there are two Washingtons. And secondly, it keeps the discussion up on all of these issues where the east side of the state is disparately treated and where our values are not reflected and they're not listened to. And I think we have to continue this conversation. So all the people that are against this or think this is a silly idea, There's actually a very serious purpose behind it. And if you do support the 51st state, you can go to Facebook and 51st State Movement. You can check that out. And you can also go to Patriot Radio and just let me know what you think. And we're on Facebook, Patriot Radio US. Give me your comments. Maybe I'm missing something here, but I don't think so. I think many of us have had enough. Now, there are some folks down in Southwest Washington who said take us too, and Northwest Washington. So maybe we have to adjust the boundaries a little bit. Surround King County. I don't know. We'll be continuing those discussions as we move forward. On the local front, want to update you real quick on the black tank issue with the North-South Freeway. I've been in meetings with the governor's office, Department of Ecology, Department of Transportation, about how to move this forward, and also Burlington Northern and Santa Fe. And everybody has been very, very helpful and solution-oriented and wanting to get this project moved forward, because it's been stalled for almost 18 months, at least by my count. And we need to move it forward. We don't need a new alignment. We keep the same alignment. And we can clean up the topsoil and do some topsoil remediation. Everybody seems to agree on that. Get the facility built. Get the freeway built. And then if there's deep soil remediation that needs to be done, it can be done with the existing facility in place. Now, there's some people that are arguing whether that can or cannot happen. But the technology that I have seen down at Hanford, it would very clearly appear that that can happen with the facility built there. So we're going to continue moving forward on that. And I really believe that we have to come together as a community, because it's been 40 years. So that's enough. We need to get the project done. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And it is my pleasure today to introduce you to Tom McCabe, Chief Executive Officer of the Freedom Foundation, and somebody that is a real gut fighter in this battle for freedom and liberty, and has been going on the offense ever since you took over. And Tom, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. It's just terrific to have you back on, my friend. Well, it sounds like we do not have him on again. So I am not hearing him come through the audio. So if the producer can figure that out, so be it. I am going to continue on a couple other things, though, while we're trying to get that figured out. One of the big issues facing the United States of America, as I've mentioned, is this infiltration of radical Islamists, this infiltration of people that do not share our values. They do not want to assimilate with the culture. What they want to do is destroy the culture. That's their modus operandi. That's their stated goal. And you know, I want to highlight a second problem besides that, okay? And that second problem is, regardless of what the external threats are, the greatest internal threat here to America is that if we don't focus on God, if we do not refocus on Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, if we don't do that, all of these other things and strategies and messaging and all this other stuff doesn't matter. It does not matter. And politics is a mission field. And I think as Christians, we become complacent. I think as Christians, we've not realized that being salt and light is sometimes difficult. And that if we just kind of compromise and we don't say things that we're supposed to, we don't speak the truth, that we're actually not doing what God has called us to do. So, to me, to me, this is an individual thing. It's not something government can do for us, not something our pastors can do for us, not something anybody else can do for us. It's something we have to do individually. Get on our knees, pray, ask for the Lord's direction, and then do what the Lord's called us to do and keep him at the focus of our lives, at the center of our lives, so we can stay at the center of our country. Because if we don't do that, all these crises that happen in life, whether you're talking family crises, you're talking, you know, at the county level, you're talking at the state level, national level, all these crises, they're going to happen. But we're not going to be able to deal with them if we don't have Christ as the focus. And that's why I bring this up. It is so important. And, you know, I look at things that are happening right now in the world, and I try to compare them. And, you know, bad things were happening 8 years ago, too. How we deal with it, that's what makes the difference. And this complacency that happens, this intentional division that occurs too in our country, I really believe stems from the fact that we haven't kept Christ at the center. You know, there was something else on the news today, and I was watching this. You know, 65 million Hillary voters urged to refuse to pay taxes. Right now, if we had done that 8 years ago in the Tea Party movement, I mean, it would have been this huge, enormous uproar. But actually, we have a better claim to just in mass as a protest not pay taxes than the left does, because some of that federal money does go to abortion. So as a conscience issue, we would have a better claim to do that. But how we approach those people that clearly disagree with us is critical. And I think one of the key ways to do this and to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ and to actually be the salt and light out there and to get off of our collective couch is we need to start asking people questions. And I want to give you some questions today and equip you today with some things to ask. And I was hoping to ask Tom McCabe this, you know, kind of how you approach, you know, union members who potentially have voted Democrat their entire lives. I mean, how do you approach them, you know? And one of the ways that I've found that works is you got to care about them. You got to pray about them. You got to care about them. And they've got to know you care before you can even talk to them. And then when you do have the opportunity to talk, ask them questions. Just simple questions. You don't have to make statements, but you can ask simple questions and have people figure things out for themselves. One of my favorite is, what's the primary source document to back up what you're saying? You know, have you actually read what the Founding Fathers wrote? Have you actually read the debates of the Constitution? Have you actually read those things? And I'm not talking, you don't even have to read them, you know, cover to cover, but have you read it? In part, if you can do that, if you can read those things and you'll understand that there is a basis for what's being said and that truth is eternal and it doesn't change whether it was 200 years ago or whether it was later. Today, most people will try to say, well, I've read some of it. But they really haven't. Now, you can lord that over them, or you can actually say, well, would you like to go through some of that with me? I'd love to sit down with you, spend some time with you, and go through it. Now, that's not going to be appropriate for every situation, but that's one way to do it. You know, and firmly, too, asking questions about economic truths, I think, helps tremendously. You know, this idea that Jesus was a socialist. Clearly, he was not a socialist. Because you can't love your neighbor if government's doing it for you. There's always going to be need out there. The question is, how are we addressing the need? And this is to the great shame of churches today in America. We have not got out there and met the need. We've not got out and met the need of widows and orphans. We have not got out there and met the need. There are some great ministries like Union Gospel Mission that are doing a great job meeting the need of feeding the hungry. Some great organizations helping with housing. But are we meeting the need of the church before people get to that point? Finding out what's going on in their lives, you know, what struggles and problems they're going through. And it's this complacency that really, to me, has caused quite a bit of the problem. Because we allow these problems to get so big that somebody's got to do something about them, and then that solution ends up being government. I mean, that's on us. That's our fault. It really is our fault. But many people say, well, you know, this is just the culture we live in, and this is just kind of inevitable. We're toward the end of days. This is going to happen. That cannot be a crutch or an excuse not to do anything. It can't be, because we are called to be salt and light in the world now. We are called to be salt and light in the world right now. Not later, not when it's convenient, now. We're not supposed to hide under a bushel basket. Not supposed to lose our saltiness so we're trampled under feet. We are supposed to be that salt and light right now. And yes, things are getting worse in some respects. But in other respects, things are getting worse because we aren't showing up as Christians. And this apathy, this complacency magnifies a lot of these problems. And so unless we're able to humble ourselves as Christians, if we're able to admit that we are not doing what God has called us to do in every area of our lives, to admit that, you know, we've fallen prey to materialism, to allowing materialism and making money to become idols in our lives, that we've become and allowed ourselves to become victim to pessimism and frivolity, the idea that, you know, eat and drink for tomorrow we die, then there's no way we're gonna turn this around. There's just no way. And I want to talk today in the last part of the show about Sir John Glubb and the Fate of Empires. Now, if you have not read this, it's a very short read. It's 26 pages, okay? And it used to be the approach to all areas of study to treat them as a science, every area, history included, political science. That's one of the reasons they called it that. And the idea was, through reflection and research and testing, that eternal truths could be discovered, some cases rediscovered, in each area of study. So in the case of history, Sir John Glubb decided to go through history and find common links, common patterns in different areas in history, and to figure out what that meant to us today and how we could not necessarily avoid them, because they seem to be pretty clear patterns, but if we are Christians and believers in those eras, to in those ages, to understand what we should be doing and why things are happening. And it gives us really our mission in that particular age. So the average, this is very, very interesting too. because he identified this. Now, he wrote this back in the 1800s, okay? Actually, I guess it would be the 1900s, early part of the 1900s, because he was born in the 1800s. But officially, this was published 5 decades ago or so. So keep that in mind when I tell you what I'm telling you, because this was before kind of the modern era of mass media and everything and all of this. All right. This was before the advent of, you know, social media and all this. This is that long ago. Okay. And he came to some conclusions. And one of the conclusions he came to is that we don't learn from history because our studies are brief and prejudiced. Okay. The idea is that we only study history for very short periods of time. We don't look way back. The fact that the Roman Empire had to deal with some of the very issues we're tackling today, had to deal with a large welfare state, had to deal with bread and circuses. Today, football. Did you just say that? Well, all sports, actually. That the Roman Empire had to deal with military conquest overextending their empire. That the Roman Empire had to deal with complacency and apathy. One of the other things that was interesting in his study is that 250 years appears to be the average length of national greatness. Okay, not the length of the empire, but true national greatness. And there, it's in it, as he did the study, it was very stark. I mean, literally date to date stark. Because, you know, while the Roman Empire might have lasted longer than 250 years, it was kind of broken up into two eras. One era where the Senate controlled, one era where you had essentially a dictator with the Caesars. 250 years each. And then it was extended beyond that, but the true eras of national greatness were 250 years. Now, many of you are probably doing the math quickly in your head, so I will let you do that. I'll pause and let you do that. 250 years, okay? 1776 to 1876 to 1976 to 2026. And he then went on to say that this average of years of the, you know, of national greatness did not vary for over 3,000 years. And it represented, interestingly enough, about 10 generations of people, generation being 25 years each. So it was about 10 generations it took for a country to lose its greatness. And there were stages that he identified in the rise and fall of empires and the fate of empires. In the first age, the first stage seemed to be what he called the pioneer stage, where you have a very small, committed group of people who are very bold, who are very self-reliant, who are very principled, who tend to be very religious. Now, that word is used in a broader sense, you know, of millenniums, and would strike out suddenly from this kind of small area. Now, it's interesting that as empires fell, there would be regions within an empire that would retain the principles, that would retain religiosity, and I say that again in kind of a historical term and sense, they would retain the hardiness, they would retain the self-reliance, they would retain that love of freedom. There was one era that didn't hold true, but most of it did. And that would be the first age, this kind of outburst of pioneers. And so, you know, where empires are on the decline, there are going to be certain areas within those empires that retain that spirit. And it's interesting that we are in one right now in the American Redoubt. There's others in the country, but we are in one right now in the American Redoubt. The next was the Age of Conquest, and usually that was typified by military conquest. That was the idea of consolidating land. And with that consolidation of land came the Age of Commerce, because when you have one government over an area of land, that tends to increase trade, bring down barriers that have prohibited trade, etc. Now, where this does not hold true is where, you know, you have a government across the world where there's so many disparate people groups that it just can't possibly hold true. So, you know, keep that in mind as I'm talking about that. So this Age of Commerce was kind of the idea. It was like business, like the era of business conquest, that you would have merchants, you would have innovation, new ideas, kind of marked like, you know, you look at the 1880s and in that era, you know, the railroads and things. You know, this kind of explosion of commerce in a country. And that was followed by what's called the Age of Affluence by Sir John Glubb. And the Age of Affluence happened after you had the military conquest, you had kind of the business conquest and the Age of Commerce, and then you would have this Age of Affluence where money began to be worshipped, where the culture, the nation became lazy and complacent. Now, again, remember, this was written before the age of mass media, etc. Okay, so if you're thinking about today, it kind of matches. Now, this Age of Affluence allowed for the pursuit of other things besides military conquest, besides business conquest. It allowed for the pursuit of knowledge in academia. And so what Sir John Glubb said is after the Age of Affluence, you would see this Age of Intellect where academic achievement was worshipped above military conquest, worshipped and praised above business conquest. And notice I said worship, because what happens is you had this worship of money that starts in the Age of Affluence, and now you have this worship of intellect that starts in the Age of Intellect. The idea that it's better to be perceived as brilliant and smart than it is to be self-reliant and freedom-loving. And it's also interesting that this rise of intellect as this age actually brought and brings forth a decline of wisdom. Now, what's the difference, Matt? Well, wisdom is truth rightly applied. Knowledge is just trying to figure out what the truth is. And so what you have a lot of times in academia is a lack of wisdom. And this has been cataloged. I mean, this is what he cataloged as part of this Age of Intellect. A lack of wisdom. So then that lack of wisdom brings on what Sir John Glubb calls the Age of Decadence. And this Age of Decadence is marked by several things. Okay, and I want to go through each one of these things. Very, very interesting. The idea that we should pursue, you know, military conquest, the idea that should be continued, the idea that we should continue business conquest is not what I'm saying, because those things, obviously, from a perspective of Christianity, don't work. Okay? What I am saying is that in this Age of Decadence, you have a push away from self-reliance toward more defensiveness and defensive-mindedness. And what do I mean by that? That means that you know, you're hole up in your walled castle, and you're not interacting with anybody outside as much as you used to. You don't go on the offense when you need to. You take an approach to things that happen to the United States as an all well. Shucks. You, dare I say, treat terrorist attacks as workplace violence. This idea, this defensive mindedness, this idea that war in and of itself is so beneath you in this age of decadence that you just would never engage in. In fact, we wouldn't want to have anything to do with it, even though there are situations when self-defense is warranted. But it's just so beneath you, that idea of defending with violence, the things that you hold dear, is so beneath you that you don't want to have anything to do with it. And so Sir John Glubb identified defensiveness, this defensive mindedness, as one of the hallmarks of the age of decadence. He then goes on to say that brings on a spirit of pessimism, that things are not going to get better, that things are going to get worse over an entire nation and culture. And the age of decadence is marked by materialism. How much stuff can we have? Not what we need, or, you know, if you're preparing, what we might need, but just this worshiping of material goods. And unfortunately, I believe Christmas really is come to epitomize that a lot in America, unfortunately. You know, where we used to be focused on other people, now we're focused on ourselves. Also, the age of decadence is marked by something called frivolity, the idea we, you know, eat, drink, and tomorrow we die. This party culture, you know, we just saw this horrific tragedy down in Oakland at this party warehouse. You see, the age of decadence is also marked by an influx of foreigners. Now, this is a pattern that has held true over 3,000 years that Sir John Glubb has identified. Another is the rise of the welfare state. The government tries to take care of every facet of the lives of its people. I brought up bread and circuses earlier in the Roman era, but it held true in many other empires as well. And then, lastly, and most interestingly, a weakening of religion is one of the hallmarks of the age of decadence. And again, that term used broadly. But the idea that the first principles can be reinterpreted or ignored, the idea that there is no higher power, the idea that we can just live for our own selfishness. And so Sir John Glubb came up with a couple of reasons he thought contributed to this age of decadence. And he stated the following. First of all, too long a period of wealth and power, selfishness, love of money, and the loss of a sense of duty. In other words, the loss of a sense of sacrificial service to other people. And so I want to end the show now by saying that, you know, it just reading down that, you're probably like, well, that sounds like America today. And it does. But what we do as Christians, how we react to it, are we continuing to be salt and light? Are we continuing to be self-reliant? Are we continuing to reach out to our neighbors and find out what their problems are and help them out? Are we loving our neighbors in that tangible way? Are we preaching the gospel? Are we making disciples? Despite everything going on around us in the culture, are we doing that? And are we doing that in the area that we're in? And are we promoting that in the area we're in? Are we growing it in the area that we're in? I think here in the American Readout, we are. And we need to continue. So based on this pattern, this is nothing new, but in the age of decadence, our mission is to be that salt and light, particularly to maintain that bulwark against complacency and selfishness and love of money and loss of sense of duty. That's what we're supposed to be doing in this area at this time. And if the pattern does hold true, we know that we're on the cusp of an outburst. And are we going to be that region in America that revives? Are we going to be that region that has a rebirth of freedom? And that's why I think that, you know, having this idea of a state of liberty out there is so important too. Are we going to be that area that holds those first principles that are God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving Americans? Are we going to be that area and that catalyst that preserves that warrior spirit of America, that spirit of innovation of business, and that gets government out of the way of the people so that we can use our material resources to help others and to preach the gospel and to make disciples? That's what's important. That's what the lesson of history is. And right now in this time, God has placed us here, and he praise him because he knew we would be here before the beginning of time, and I trust him, and I urge that you do too today. And think about how you can be that salt and light, maybe in your everyday life, maybe in your business, but most definitely in your family. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate all of the prayers and thoughts. And once again, remember to do everything you can to defend freedom locally.